Welcome to Voices for Democracy, a weekly news program on the national, international, and local events that affect you and your community.
You know, I think neither the Bush side or the Gore side are any better about looking out for the interests of the people. And I would hope that the people would start asking what kind of system would be better for looking out for their interests. And I think ultimately a democracy that's more direct and relies less on representatives and presidents and far-removed figures for decision-making and brings decision-making back to communities would be a better model.
As allegations of racial profiling and police intimidation join the slew of misconduct around the presidential elections in Florida, those in the protest movement are beginning to question the effectiveness of our so-called democracy. Amy Shontoff talks with Cindy Milstein about the elections and the possibilities within a participatory political sphere. The transnational biotechnology industry held a meeting in Vancouver from November 14th to the 16th at the Pacific Rim Biotechnology Conference and BioExpo 2000. It was met by a major counterconference, direct actions, and protests. Thatcher Collins from the Vancouver Independent Media Center brings us a look at the events. Over 3,400 people crossed the police line at a massive demonstration against the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia. Vermonters showed their solidarity with the demonstration in Montpelier last Friday. Jeannie Barron and Amy Shontoft bring us a report. And in the second half of our program...
What next? Should we then allow sex with children? Matthew Shepard has been in hell just over 2 years now. He was trolling for sex, and God executed a judgment upon him. That's what you get. You get to go to hell when you live that lifestyle. You're going to go to hell.
Being a fag is bad, and you go to hell for it if you don't repent.
How old are you?
13.
The followers of Fred Phelps and the Westboro Baptist Church of Kansas visited Montpelier again today. While their zealous homophobic message was met with great opposition this past summer, today Vermonters chose to largely ignore their presence. Walter Hurt has a report on their visit. Arthur Fulsch talked to Jason Ford of the Native Forest Network about a new logging technique that will be implemented in the Warren area of the Vermont National Forest. This week in 1976, 700 people were arrested as tens of thousands besieged the Pentagon in protest against the continuing war in Vietnam. And this week marks the 17-year anniversary of the invasion of Grenada by the U.S. Marines. And now, these news headlines with Arthur Fulsch.
In Thailand, former Nike employees are protesting Nike working conditions. It is estimated that there are over 70,000 workers that produce sports shoes and apparel for Nike in Thailand. Most of the workers receive only minimum wage with no welfare benefits. These workers must work from 10 to 12 hours every day, sometimes until midnight. Many workers have had their labor rights suppressed and violated. In some cases, workers were laid off from factory work, and the work was subcontracted to factories where workers receive lower wages and have no legal protection. Nike spends nearly $1 billion each year on advertising and sponsorship deals, such as the $440 million deal with Manchester United Football Club announced last week. While Thai workers don't have enough money to survive each day, they have no money to save, and Thailand provides no unemployment compensation scheme. Many members of the Park Garment Workers Union have been dismissed since the forming of the union in 1990. Thai Iro and Iro Garment have produced Nike products for many years. Over 1,000 workers have been laid off since September 15th. Much of the production has shifted to non-unionized suppliers affiliated with the Iro Group. Recently, factories producing for Nike in Thailand have been shifting production to subcontractors and non-union facilities and to provinces where wages and benefits are lower. We now turn to The Hague, where thousands of activists have been protesting the second round of the Kyoto Accords. The Kyoto Accords were an international effort to create environmental agreement among all nations. Critics have charged that the accords are weak and insufficient for dealing with the scope of the problems that we are facing. Seven activists chained themselves to the doors of the U.S. consulate, demanding that the U.S. take responsibility for its actions. Their press release stated, "We are talking about the climate. and the U.S. being a major factor of influence in decisions of the world's governments has to be reminded of its responsibility. Today, activists are surrounding the negotiations, blockading them in by building a dike, which symbolizes the peril that low-lying countries like the Netherlands face with sea level rise. This week, the FBI released additional documents about its controversial Carnivore technology. Carnivore is an internet monitoring system which allows government organizations like the FBI to observe internet traffic like web use and email. Critics immediately lambasted it as a proof that the email tapping program is more powerful and invasive than the government has disclosed. The Electronic Privacy Information Center, which has sued the FBI for information through the Freedom of Information Act, said that the batch of paperwork indicates that Carnivore can capture and archive unfiltered internet traffic, contrary to previous FBI assertions. Critics have been arguing that Carnivore is just one more part of a cyber world that is increasingly watched. Last week, in India, over 1,000 environmental protesters stormed police barricades in New Delhi and marched up to the offices of the World Bank, demanding that they be allowed to meet with visiting bank president James Wolfensohn. The Indian Supreme Court handed down a ruling on October 18th, rejecting a six-year-old court appeal against a roughly $7 billion IMF-sponsored dam project in western India. Proponents of the dam say it will produce much-needed electricity and flood control, while critics have pointed out to the fact that hundreds of thousands of people will be displaced by the rising water, as well as a total disruption in local food production. Here in Vermont, Vermont Yankee is once again in the news. In an order released on Friday, the Vermont Public Service Board responded to a motion by the New England Coalition on Nuclear Pollution and VPIRG, the Vermont Public Interest Research Group, objecting to the late filing and recent settlement proposed for the sale of Vermont Yankee Nuclear Plant. The board agreed that the late filing was material and proposed to sanction petitioner's board for disagreeing with the deadline. The order rejected the proposed sale because it does not promote the general good. Quote, "This is an important victory for us as well as the public," Michael Daly said. Spokesman for the New England Coalition on Nuclear Pollution said, "We believe sanctions are entirely in order for the arrogant disregard of public process demonstrated by the petitioners." Daly noted that Friday's order chastising the petitioners underscores why the public should view the new proposal with skepticism. The board noted that the declining price scheme is a disadvantage to the proposal as a reason to unreasonably constrain parties' ability to review and present evidence on the transaction. In plain English, Daly said, the utilities tried to use this trick of a fake high sales price for the first time round, and the board is making it clear that they will not be bulldozed into a hasty proceeding. In agricultural news, on November 17th, two environmental activists who dumped more than a ton of silage that blocked the exit of a McDonald's restaurant last month to protest the use of biotech foods will not be prosecuted, at least for now. Michael Colby and Boots Wardinsky were arrested for civil disobedience, which entailed the silage dumping as well as leafleting and educational outreach. This comes on the heels of revelations about genetically modified Starlink corn making its way into human food products. Last week, Greenpeace activists dumped more than 2 tons of Starlink-contaminated corn in front of the Environmental Protection Agency's local headquarters in San Francisco. The activists, wearing biohazard suits, demanded that the agency deny approval of the gene-altered corn for human consumption, as requested by the corn's producer, Adventus. In Vancouver, the Mazotistas, the Tortilla Avengers, unfurled a banner reading, "No to GMO," at the Pacific Rim Biotechnology 2000 conference. This report from Thatcher Collins from the Vancouver Independent Media Center on the Pacific Rim BioExpo 2000. The Transatlantic Business Dialogue met this past weekend in Cincinnati, Ohio. Outside the meetings, demonstrators held numerous rallies and protests in the streets. More than 1,000 protesters were in the street demonstrating against the heads of corporations who were meeting behind closed doors. More than 100 arrests occurred over the course of the weekend, with one protester being held on $400,000 bond and charged with 2 felonies. The Transatlantic Business Dialogue is one of the lead groups in influencing the World Trade Organization. Currently, the TABD is working on the removal of trade barriers in technology areas. The Transatlantic Business Dialogue is pushing the WTO to promote the following: further trade liberalization, improved market access for industrial goods, simplification and strengthening of existing agreements on government procurement, trade facilitation, developing the WTO's rules for investment, and clarifying the multilateral environmental agreements which the WTO is depending upon.
Communicate, illustrate, motivate, activate.
As allegations of racial profiling and police intimidation join the slew of misconduct around the presidential elections in Florida, those in the protest movement are beginning to question the effectiveness of our national government. Amishon Toft talks with Cindy Milstein about the elections and the possibilities within a participatory political sphere.
Throughout the presidential elections this year, the monotony of the two-party system has been confronted by a growing dissatisfaction with the status quo. Both the Democrats and the Republicans were met by massive demonstrations at their national conventions this summer, and every televised presidential debate was met with puppets and lockdowns. Beyond campaign finance reform and third-party politics is a reinvigoration of the political sphere and a redefinition of what it means to take political action. We saw this in Boston, when demonstrators there staged a counter-debate where citizens asked each other how they would run their communities, given the chance, and what it is that prevents them from having control over the governance of their lives. All of this has culminated in a most surprising expose of the mechanical process of voting itself in a country that prides itself on being the largest democracy in the world, but can't seem to decide how much power its citizens should actually have access to. As we hear reports of racial profiling and police harassment, disenfranchisement and ballot miscounts, we begin to wonder how truly democratic this great nation of ours actually is. Cindy Milstein is a teacher at the Institute for Social Ecology in Plainfield, Vermont, and I spoke to her on Sunday from her home in Chicago.
It sort of, in a way, doesn't matter to me so much whether Gore or Bush gets in. On certain issues, yes, but on overall, it's still part of the same system that takes away our ability to decide things that are important to us in our lives. And it's kind of a far stretch, but you know, if this is how flawed and corrupt representative democracy is, I think it goes to show that the United States, what it claims to be the standard of democracy, really doesn't represent what the people really are thinking and how they want to make decisions. I think the one good thing about what's been happening is that it's gotten people in the United States to talk about politics for days on end, which is really unusual in the United States. People tend not to discuss politics that much, so even if they're talking about a better representative system, they're talking about, you know, okay, this just shows that my opinion matters, and I hope they keep thinking that through and come to some conclusion that if their opinion really mattered, we might have a really, really different system than we do right now for making decisions. You know, I think neither the Bush side or the Gore side are any better about looking out for the interests of the people, and I would hope that the people would start asking what kind of system would be better for looking out for their interests, and I think ultimately a democracy that's more direct and relies less on representatives and presidents and far-removed figures for decision-making and brings decision-making back to communities would be a better model. It's clear the tradition of town meetings still exists once a year.